Three Sister planting is corn, beans, squash, and it was a companion.
Blossom end rot only impacts tomatoes, right?
Yeah. I'm an angry pepper.
Hope you get blossom end rot. Hope you get.
Right? They're like basil and tomato. They're like that cute couple in high school.
So in.
Yeah, Snugs and Snails.
Welcome back to the Helpful Gardeners podcast. Well.
Do you notice anything different?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll come to me.
I'm sure. We'll probably address it later. I'm just kidding. No, for anybody who is watching on Spotify or on YouTube, we have officially gone video.
Yeah. I'm going to wave at all the cameras because I don't know which one I'm on. Yeah.
How many times have we wanted to show something, right? Obviously, if you're listening, we're still going to be addressing things via audio, of course. But for those times where we just really want to show you something, and if you benefit from seeing something, then this is going to be for you.
So for two people who've done so much media, we are like, is it right? Should we do it? Is it? Yeah. And yet here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, looking around, a lot of care and attention has gone into this space. We've got lots of plants, of course. Our new studio space has grow lights, which was your idea. Fantastic idea.
Yeah, all these lights that you see, they're not just camera lights, they're both. So these are going to keep all of our plants alive.
Yeah. So we got some bougie stuff. We got some gardening books. I don't know. It looks really good.
Yeah. And even though he doesn't watch or listen, we have to give a huge shout out to Guy.
Yes.
Our store dad. Guy, he put up all of the wood for us. He's helped us since day one all the way through. Love to Guy.
And honestly, thank you so much for joining us this week. And we're so excited because we're starting our next mini series, and it's all about seed starting. And we're going to be taking you through an extensive, well, kind of a general guide each week on different kinds of seeds that you'll be starting. And so we'll be talking about, you know, the root vegetables, the leafy greens. We're going to be talking about the towering plants, the gourds, herbs, flowers. So there's lots to cover. So why don't we just jump into this week? And this week we've got the towering giants. So things that grow tall stalks. So things like corn, we've got peppers, we've got tomatoes, we've got, what else do we have in here? We have
peas and beans.
Peas and beans. So ones that climb.
Do you ever say peas and beans and then you get it wrong and you say bees and peens? I do that all the
time. I said that earlier today.
Good. It's not just me.
Oh, my gosh.
Where you're like, I need the bees and peens.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Everybody's like, what? And you're like, yeah, I know what I'm talking about.
I know what I did.
Yeah, I know what I'm talking about. Whatever.
No, but let's start into talking about some of these towering giants. So we've got some seed samples here. We just got a whole bunch of seeds. It's a really exciting time in the greenhouse, honestly.
And not just us. It is. It's funny. Somebody got a hold of me today.
Yeah.
Remember Erin? We interviewed her about the drop-in shelter.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So Erin was in the store today. And right away, immediately, I was like, oh, she's going to want to talk about seeds. Getting seeds. Nope, not at all. She wanted to talk about birding and feeding squirrels. And I was like, just... If somebody talks to me right now and they're like, I want to talk about gardening, it's either seed or garden planning is immediately where my brain goes.
Yeah.
And then I was pleasantly surprised. So we went and hung out in birding for about 10 minutes and hung out with Erin for a bit.
And they need attention this time of year
Absolutely.
Too, right? Okay, so starting into some of these varieties of seeds that you can be starting in your garden in 2024. I mean, in peppers, I know tomatoes and peppers are kind of your wheelhouse. So if you choose to go down the route of growing the unique varieties and getting the common varieties in the grocery store, I mean, I got the Carolina Reaper pepper.
Fantastic choice.
The pink brandy wine tomato.
You only got that because it has brandy in it.
It does. Yeah, that's actually absolutely the reason. What else do we have here? Obviously, you can grow just like the generic red bell pepper. That's
classic,
really popular.
Classic cherry.
Yeah, but that one, so that's why I want to go into this because even looking into some of these seeds, there's different kinds that you can buy, right? So this one, for example, the Mountain Magic Cherry Tomato from West Coast Seeds is coated. And I know you were talking about that last week and how some seeds can carry a bit of a coating to help with germination, right?
The coating that's on it will help with germination because as it breaks down, it'll feed it. They'll put in like a small fertilizer charge or they'll make it out of peat moss so it holds moisture better. But it does also prevent animals from eating them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a direct sow outside. And also, and this is kind of cute, not all seeds are created equal.
Oh.
So some seeds are teeny tiny little seeds. And if they don't put the coating on them, it looks almost like you've got a powder or a dust in your hand. And then you're trying to only put one in the soil. So they kind of make them bigger.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of cute. It's kind of a cute reason to do it. But yeah, there's a number of reasons why they do coating or pelletizing. At the end of the day, it plants the same. You don't need to worry about that because all of that is going to happen under the ground.
Okay. And I also noticed, like in beans, for example, you have two different kinds of beans. We have the bush bean.
Yep.
And then we've also got the pole bean.
Yep.
And I'm assuming it works like pole beans will climb and bush beans will stay nice and bushy.
Yeah. So in England, it's bush bean and runner bean.
Oh, okay.
And the runners, they send out runners and they run up your posts or your trellis or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the bush ones are more of a mound.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain seeds where, you know, you take your ghost chilies, right? And the reason I picked these is because they were the closest. but these, you open this and I think, not everybody, but the vast majority of people have cut open a pepper. We know what a pepper seed looks like. The part that you rip out and throw in the compost.
Yeah.
That's what that seed is going to look like. It's going to be yellow, kind of flat, dried out a little. Put it in the soil. Away you go. It doesn't really need anything else. But certain seeds, peas and beans especially, might need an inoculant. They might need to be soaked first. And some people swear by it. Other people go, I've never done it. I've never needed it. And it's kind of like we always talk about heat mat and grow light. Do you need it or do you not?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I believe that you don't have to do those steps, but they're definitely going to increase your chances.
Okay. So depending on what your end goal is, like if you're like, I need to have a really high success rate, then you might want to invest in something like that. That makes sense. So when we're talking about some companion planting ideas, so again, to review, companion planting is growing two things together and they'll benefit each other or one will benefit the other. Do you have any inspiration for tomatoes, beans, peas?
So, you know, we've talked a lot about companion planting and something I've never brought up and I always think it's an interesting. So have you ever looked up an animal and you've caught yourself saying, what is this animal's benefit? What does this animal do?
Yeah.
Right? In the ecosystem or in general. And it's like, does it have to do anything?
Yeah.
It just exists. I am going to talk obviously about that, but I always find it interesting that we talk companion planting, like what is the benefit it will bring to my plant? But also what about companion planting where it's aesthetically pleasing or in the case of something like tomato, grow basil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, basil does actually have other benefits, but it also is delicious with tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So grow the two together because they're delicious together.
Yeah.
Right? They're just a good couple.
Yeah.
Right? They're like basil and tomato. They're like that cute couple in high school.
So in.
But so not everything, okay? And this is why I love gardening, Brandy. How many times do we talk about, this is what you have to do, unless.
I know. This is why gardening is so fun and frustrating at the same time.
Exactly. Because, you know, when you're baking something, you're like, add this to this, do this, and you get this.
Yeah.
But gardening, there's always something different. So we talk about companion planting. Peppers really do not like companion planting.
What?
Because peppers do not like being robbed of any of their nutrients. So there are certain things that are okay to grow with peppers. Vast majority, even on a Google search, and what I've always been taught and heard about, peppers, they're good alone. They'll do okay. But one thing I do like to do with peppers, I do like to put flowers next to them.
Ah, pollinators.
Yeah, because their flowers are tiny, often they're kind of white or off-white. So I do like to put flowers next to them. But, okay, the coolest thing I think we have to address for companion planting, and we're talking about we're talking about two out of three of them today, are the Three Sisters companion planting.
Oh, I've never heard of this before.
The Three Sisters companion planting was the Iroquois. And the Iroquois Nation was northeast area, so like northern New York, southern Ontario, Great Lakes. And the Three Sister planting is corn, beans, squash. And it was a companion. The corn grows super nice and tall.
Right.
The beans are a nitrate fixer, so the beans add nitrogen, and the squash grows extremely aggressively across the ground as a natural mulch and weed mat to keep other plants from getting in. And the three of them grown together were considered the three sisters because they all supported each other with their needs and would promote the growth.
That's so cool. It saves a lot of space too.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we always talk, oh, I got to put up a trellis for my peas or beans. Or I've got to do this. I've got to run wires. I got to run cables or plant sunflowers or corn.
I love it.
Yeah. And another really good one. So basil does actually have a benefit because of the high oil content. A lot of bugs don't like it. Marigold, onions are often popular, mm-hmm. And onions and tomatoes go great together as well. So you're playing with that. And then another one that a lot of people like, it attracts pollinators, repels bugs, and you also get a herb out of it is lavender. But I mean, really, you can't go wrong.
No. And honestly, looking at all of these ones, if we were to move into their preferred habitat, so, you know, sun exposure, I imagine all of these are high production, so they therefore require some full sun.
Yep.
They will require lots of water, especially on those hot summer days when you get like plus 30.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
And do you have to be careful of like exposure to some of the elements like wind or anything?
If you take somebody in a certain environment and that's the environment that they're born and raised in, they are adapted to it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is you take somebody from northern Greenland and drop them in Uruguay, they're probably going to be like, this is unbearable.
Yeah.
You take somebody from Uruguay and drop them in northern Greenland, they're probably going to be like, this is unbearable.
Yeah.
Both are humans. Both have the exact same requirements for life, but they haven't adapted to those conditions. They're not used to heat and humidity or cold and darkness, whatever. The reason I'm using that to illustrate is because humans require the same thing. Doesn't matter where you live, food, water, but they've adapted to different conditions. And that's one of the reasons why I tell people, when you're growing from seed, put a fan on them. Because we grow them in this perfect environment. It's perfect uniform temperature. And they have the exact amount of light, exactly 8 hours a day at this distance and no wind. And these are, they're doing so good. And we put them outside and suddenly they're getting baked hot. They're running out of water and the wind is blowing them flat. And you're like, oh my God, what has happened?
Yeah.
So yeah, get it used to adverse conditions.
I've had a tomato do that same thing.
Yep.
Like the top just completely went over. So it can happen to any of these towering giant type veggies
My favorite is buying the big tomato cage and you put the tomato in the tomato cage and then you look and your tomato is like twice as big as your cage. That was a solid investment.
Good for half of it.
Yeah.
Let's kind of go into more of the seed starting aspect because maybe that's what you're starting to think of now. These, I think, I think all of these have to be started inside, aren't they?
Yes. For best results.
Yep.
They can all be started outside.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. They can. It is. So I'll give an example. Two years ago. I did nothing in my garden because I was so busy. And all of my huge tomatoes, well, I hadn't harvested them all from the year before, so a lot had fallen in the ground. I was like, just turn them in. It's compost, which I don't actually recommend, but I was very lazy. Well, some of those seeds germinated, and I let them go. And by the September of that year, I was getting tomatoes off them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I maybe got 30 tomatoes, maybe I might be exaggerating. And I waited all season for it. So I recommend starting them indoors. You can start them outside, but you're one hard frost away from losing them. And they take a long time to grow. Peas and beans might be the exception to that. I have started them outside with very good results.
Okay. Is this something that you can stagger growth or do you recommend starting everything at the same time?
Start everything at the same time.
Okay.
If you are going to stagger it, it's not like your fast leafy greens, which I'm not even going to mention because that's a separate show. So we have to save that. But some of those leafy greens, you can do succession planting.
Cool.
So by the time some of them are getting ready to harvest, you start another round and same on, and you keep them going. You might want to stagger depends on how many you're growing. Like say you're doing 9 tomatoes. Maybe you want to start 3 now. Mm-hmm. And then in 2 weeks, start another 3. And then in 2 weeks, start another 3. But the difference is negligible. Once they start going, sooner you start them, sooner you're going to be harvesting.
So moving into vessel options, because I think some of these, you know how we were talking last week about starting some in hanging baskets or in planters, all of the things that you can do out in the garden, like the garden bed, a raised planter, do all of these types of vegetables work in all of those types of vessels? Like a corn, well, corn not in a hanging basket, obviously.
Challenge accept. I'm just trying to picture that.
No, let's not picture that.
It would like be an antenna coming out the side of your
house. Can you imagine seeing that from the neighbor's yard?
I'm just thinking like how big the basket would have to be for the roots.
So that's what I mean, like the root system on these things.
I would say corn would be the only one I think would have to go directly in the ground.
Okay.
I've never done beans in a pot, but I have done peas in a pot.
Okay.
Okay, but I've never done, a few years ago now, I had an area, great sun, and I had a fence that the peas wanted to climb, but it was concrete. So I did pots, and I put the peas in it. They did amazing. Mm. Okay, they did really good. I think beans would do good. I've never done it, so I don't want to be like 100%, but I would see no reason why I can't. Tomatoes and peppers love a pot. Mm-hmm. They love it. A nice big pot, 3 gallon, 5 gallon is where you want to be. But the black pot keeps those roots toasty warm. And then, like I said, peppers especially, they don't like to share. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's why they're angry and they're hot. They're like, I don't want to share. I'm an angry pepper. But peppers do really good in a pot. I know a lot of people that I know who grow peppers really like to grow them in a greenhouse because it keeps them hot in a pot, so their roots are nice and warm. But the other reason about growing in a pot is when you feed them the nutrients, it stays in the pot. Doesn't go anywhere. But I bet you, like I was saying there, if you had a balcony, do a window box and do beans or peas.
And that's exactly what I'm getting at. It's like all of these vegetables seem very approachable for no matter what type of space other than corn.
Yep. And I bet you peas and beans as well would work good in a hanging basket.
Yeah.
Because then instead of climbing, they would trail down.
That'd be so pretty.
And then you could pick them off the vine. Now, I don't know what the overall weight would be without them having a structure to hold on to. But I mean, really, would it be that hard to run a couple of vines down from your hanging basket down to the ground and let them grow down?
Yeah, like if you did like a little bit of wire or something and it just climbed its way down. So moving into transplanting, because like you mentioned, tender seedlings, you need to give them the best start when they go out into the garden. And so do you have any recommendations for soil amendments? Like, are you looking for a heavy soil, a lighter soil? What do you think?
So all of these, they want a rich soil. They want a soil that's good compost, good organic material in it, well prepared. So like some of your root vegetables, and I'm not going to, spoiler alert, we're not going to talk about that. You'll have to tune in for those. But some plants want more. If the soil is too rich, it can actually cause problems for them. All of these that we're talking about today, our primary focus, they want a high organic, rich soil. They are going to pull a lot out of that soil. And then, you know, and I'm holding a pack here for anybody who's watching, the Soil Activator.
Oh, what is that?
So Soil Activator is just a small pack. You can water it into the root zone. And basically, it's filled with bacteria.
Oh.
Yeah. Healthy bacterias.
Oh.
So they go into the soil, and what they do is they help break down certain foods from their complex forms to their basic forms so the plants can uptake it. They'll increase nodules. Okay, just like we talked briefly about inoculant.
Yeah.
So inoculant is good to put on your legumes. It contains a fungus in it, and what it does is, so this one, you mix the two parts together, you mix it in your seeds, And what it does is it creates a much better growing zone for the roots when they first come out. And then the roots start forming better. This will do that, among other things. So it breaks down food. It allows better root nodules.
Like the activator will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, it just makes that soil even richer. So it allows a better like biochemical transfer of the nutrients into the plant.
Oh, neat. Okay. Yeah. So you have a mixture of that, really good soil, and then obviously the general care that comes with that after they've been planted.
Exactly. Because a lot of people, bacteria is a bad word, mm-hmm. right? Like when you talk bugs and you go, you need a parasitic wasp. And they're like, wasp?
I don't know.
And I get it. Like I hear the word. If somebody was like, oh, no, you just need a friendly spider. I'd be like, I'm right on that. Yeah, let's get two, three. We don't want them to be lonely.
Yeah. I mean, and another thing, too, when we're talking about transplanting plants outside, you know, that frost is always the major
yep.
thing on every gardener's mind. And I know that this varies across the country. So be sure to look at your final frost dates in your own region, but making sure that you're planting after that last frost.
Everywhere I have lived across Canada, even in England, you cannot tell me when the final frost is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me. And you can put it out and a week later you get a frost.
Yeah.
Or, as happens, depending on where you are in the city. Right? You're at a higher elevation, you get a frost, I don't.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of thing. Be prepared.
Okay.
And honestly, depending on how big they are, you can do anything like putting cups over them, like little red solo cups, a coffee mug, get frost blankets. All you have to do is stop that frost from hitting them. They can take the cooler temperature.
Okay.
They don't want to be freezing. If it's freezing, we have a whole different slew of problems. Not much is going to do. You put your seedlings out and then it's going down to -7. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You have my deepest sympathies.
try again.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But frost, yeah, there's any number of ways to keep frost off those tender seedlings.
Yeah.
And you cannot harden them up against frost. So when I was talking about wind,
mm-hmm.
frost, just protect them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put their coats on.
Put their coats on. You know, you're just talking about ways that you can protect your plants. And that leads me into our next point, which is structures and equipment for these type of plants. So things that you might need as your plant grows, you know, for example, tomatoes, you were just talking about earlier about cages.
Yep.
And so maybe putting something on the plant at the very beginning so it'll grow into it is a good idea. What else do you think you'll need?
So cages are really good. We have a new one this year, the Root-A-Round.
Yeah.
That's really fun. It's got the deep water feeder. That also works on peppers because it gets the nutrients right to the roots. Great starting point. And then once they're past that, okay, it'll outgrow the cage, but not all of them will.
Yeah.
Because tomatoes, there's a determinant and indeterminate. Peppers, a lot of them are, they just max out at a size. So have a look at that. Bamboo stakes.
Yeah.
Bamboo hoops, mm-hmm. Trellis, metal stakes, string, twine, trellis netting, bird. There is any... And pre-existing structures.
Oh, I
just
I
said
love
I had a
that.
Fence.
I
yeah.
love that.
Like, okay, I like... Maybe it's the England in me. Maybe it's just because it is a classic look that works everywhere. But I like that wrought iron fencing look. I really do. But I like it a lot better when it's zhuzhed up a bit, when
yeah.
it's like churched up and it's kind of pretty. Peas and beans will like it too. Yeah, they'll naturally climb
it. Makes
me so happy. Yeah. Even corn. So what I said at the beginning, right? Maybe you start your corn and you're transplanting it outside. Maybe you didn't have a fan. Maybe you forgot to turn the fan on. Whatever. Now, corn does not need a bamboo stake, but maybe when it's a little guy, it does. I want to talk about this. Anything that you stake, and this mm-hmm. is kind of important, it doesn't matter if it's a tree, a corn, anything. Whenever you're tying something off or staking something, our natural instinct is to make it tight.
Ah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't want it tight.
Yep.
You just, so if this is your corn plant and your corn plant is going up nice and straight and it's going up solid, and you're worried about the wind, Okay, you don't want it to blow flat. Okay, that's the last thing you want. But you don't want it locked in place, because if you're not letting it move, what's the point? The moment you take the bamboo off, you've done the same thing as inside. Mm-hmm. So you want it to wiggle, even trees. I see people putting on tree stakes and they're reefing it so tight this tree can't move. Then they take the tree stakes off and one gust of wind and the tree falls over.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't developed that natural movement. Mm-hmm. So even if you're staking anything, allow it to move. Allow it to have a natural growth so that it can start getting used to the elements. And one thing we have to, have you ever done that? Put out your seedlings. It's springtime and it goes from spring to summer real quick and it cooks your seedlings real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shade cloth, make sure you've got water. Remember, you're taking them out of a little pot that traps water and keeps them, and you're putting them into a garden that has significantly better drainage. So you're like, oh, this little guy needs half a cup. And half an hour later, it's like, I'm very thirsty.
You know, I think what we should kind of go into next is that general care instruction, because when we're talking about watering, for example, you know, in the past, we've talked about like, oh, adversity makes them stronger. But sometimes like you might need to water like 3 times a day, right? In those plus 30 days. So when we're also talking about vessels, so like, for example, wood planters or raised planters, they might not require the same amount of water as your garden. So I think it requires more, doesn't it?
Loaded question.
Yeah.
Right? You're right, because it's above ground, so the wind can dry it out. It's got the sun, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But depending on what you have planted in it, maybe it doesn't drink as much water.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe the soil quality is different. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a looser, better drained soil. Like, there's a difference between a little bit of adversity to boost strength and damaging. Mm-hmm. You're not going to train a plant to use less water by giving it less water. You're just going to harm your plant. Yeah. Like, well, I give it less water. What happened? It died. Mm-hmm. I got one tomato.
Couldn't take it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you weaken it too much, then it can also become susceptible to disease. It can become... So if you're like conditioning yourself for a race... Okay, there is a difference between conditioning yourself properly and hurting yourself. You see people go to the gym and they're like working out, and then the next day they can't move because they have done too much damage. They haven't, same thing, you go, this plant is going to make it, and it does make it, but it has taken so much damage. It gets hit by aphids, it doesn't have the strength to fight them. Mm-hmm. Okay, little bit of heat and it's wilting and dying. So you need to find that balance between hardening it off, so it's healthy, between hurting it or overindulging it so that it can't take any adverse effects, and it's finding that balance. It's walking that line.
Okay, so what about fertilizer? Because I know downstairs we have a couple different kinds of fertilizer, and we have a vegetable specific one that has tomatoes on it. So right. So how does all of that work? So you need a vegetable-specific fertilizer for these?
Not really. Yes, but no.
Okay.
Okay, loaded question. So we talked about fertilizers before. At the end of the day, okay, if I had to pick, I've said it before, and I will never get bored of saying it. If I had to pick between using a fertilizer or having an excellent soil, it's no choice. I'm picking the soil every time. Like every day, there is not a time I won't pick the soil, but I don't have to pick. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do use both. I have an excellent soil, then I fertilize. And the reason for that is the soil is amazing, it's healthy, but as a plant grows, we were just talking about peppers taking nutrients.
Right.
They deplete the nutrients in the soil. The bacteria, everything gets affected. The sun bleaching it out, pasteurizing it, the rain pulling it deeper, washing it away. So I recommend fertilizer. Now, buy a vegetable fertilizer, absolutely. But some people, they're like, well, I'm growing 5 tomatoes. I've got a small perennial bed. I'm doing some annuals. And I've also got my Cotoneaster hedge and my apple tree. Do I need to buy 4, 5, 6 fertilizers? 2 fertilizers? What do I... Okay, Maybe just buy an all-purpose.
Yeah, at okay. that point.
Yep. Oh, my God. Do you know what I did the other night? I got to share this with you. Sorry. Quick digression. So remember I've talked to you about times when I've left the lid off the fertilizer and I've hit it with the hose? Yes. So the other night I was making gravy. I was making sausage and pierogies.
Oh.
So good. So good. And I was making gravy. Well, the gravy I use is one that my grandma used to use from England. My sister found it and she bought me a package. Okay. Well, you have to use cornstarch. So I was like, okay, no problem. So I'm following the recipe. I didn't put the lid on the cornstarch. And then you have to put water in the gravy. And I got water in my cornstarch. And I was like, that's like fertilizer in the kitchen. You should have put the lid on it. Anyway, I scooped it all out. I think I saved my cornstarch, and the gravy was delicious. But I've done that before, so...
You're such a nerd.
I know, but it was... How long did that, like, screw a lid on the cornstarch? What, 8 seconds? Seven?
Yeah.
Okay, but I didn't do it, and I ruined a whole bunch of cornstarch because I didn't do it. It's the same with the fertilizer. So keep your fertilizer in a cool, dry location. Don't maybe leave it in your garage with the lid off all through the winter. Like some people who will remain nameless.
Yeah, let's they don't call need them, to be named.
No, we'll call them for the sake of this, Brandy.
Yeah, okay. It was me.
But yeah, if you really want to be, okay, so let's address, you know, the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. Blossom end rot.
Yep. Let's go right into diseases because that...
Well, it ties in, right? There's a progression. It
100% ties in because what's the main... So blossom end rot only impacts tomatoes, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that is essentially... Remind me, I forget.
So blossom end rot... I'm not going to say everybody. Darn near everybody who has grown a tomato has seen it. Yeah. And it's when your tomato and it's looking great and you're like, I'm so excited. And it's covered and you're super excited. And then as it starts ripening and it goes from that green to red, you get a tiny little dark spot. It can look black, brownish, off red, but it does not look... It's a spot.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, it's just a spot. A spot on your apple, a spot on your tomato, you cut it off. But as your tomato gets bigger, it starts forming bigger. And it ends up being like basically a black hole. Do you know what it can look like? You remember the Death Star in Star Wars? Remember the big laser on it?
Oh my gosh, yes.
That's what it always reminds me of, like that big gun laser thing on the Death Star. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and it's like gnarly looking too.
It ruins your fruit.
It does, and your dreams.
Yep.
But there's a reason for that.
Yep.
It's like what you've said is a calcium deficiency, right? And we have a product for that.
Exactly. So you can use... a 20-20-20 fertilizer and just augment with calcium.
Yeah.
I hate giving out home remedies. So, and the reason I bring that up right now is I've heard people say, no word of a lie, I've absolutely heard it, you can buy osteoporosis supplements, right, which are high calcium supplements, and they crush them up and they dissolve them in boiling water, they let that cool, and then they water that on the plant, and that stops blossom end rot. Okay, maybe it does. It's high calcium.
Yeah.
But how much is too much? What else is in that medication that your plant might be absorbing?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know all of that science. Ergo, I'm scared to do it. Plus, the other flip side is, I don't know how many pills you have to crush, how often for each plant. So you do all of that. You buy those pills. You crush them up. You put them in there. And it doesn't work. Well, you've wasted a lot of time and money for nothing.
Exactly. And you know who does know the science?
Exactly.
The people who make the calcium fertilizer.
So buy a 20-20-20 and just buy an organic. And again, it's like a fertilizer.
Yeah. And this is soluble or granular? Like, does it go on top of the soil?
I think there's two different types. Okay. I think there is a water soluble and I think there is a granular.
Oh, great. So whatever your watering style is, your fertilizing style, then you can just add it together and that'll be easy.
Can I give a little life hack?
Yeah.
A little pro tip? So they are not the same family at all, not related, but tomato grows exactly like cannabis.
Oh.
Okay. So back in the day when cannabis was illegal, I'm not going into any ethics or anything here, I'm just stating a point. people weren't allowed to come in and talk to us about cannabis. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was illegal. If somebody came in and said, I'm growing a cannabis plant, we had to say, no, that's enough of that. They would come in and they would say, I am growing a tomato plant. Because I got asked by Maximum Yield magazine, what was the biggest change I had noticed since legalization?
Yeah.
And I said, the number of 20 to 25 year olds who come in who are no longer growing tomatoes in January. But it was the workaround. It was the law.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm not going to talk about that. However, cannabis is also massively deficient in calcium and magnesium.
Huh.
And nearly every line of cannabis nutrients has a product called CalMag.
Huh.
Okay.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
calcium magnesium.
Yeah.
And you put that on. Now, I've grown tomatoes using only cannabis nutrients. It is amazing. It's also very expensive. Mm. Again, I have access to these things. That's why I tried them.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing results. Absolutely, like, knocked it out the park. It was Ramo Nutrients. Shout out where shout out is due. And I followed it exactly if I was growing cannabis. The moment they started flowering, I swapped to the flowering cycle. Mm-hmm. Not even a whisper of blossom end rot. Mm-hmm. They were the best tomatoes I've ever grown. Flavor, everything, 10 out of 10.
Mm.
10 out of 10. But that wasn't me buying calcium pills or eggshells or whatever the heck else. I'm using a product called CalMag.
Yep.
It literally says on it how much to use. So I was adding something accordingly. So there are options. That one is great. It is expensive, but it's a lot of fun.
Is there anything else that we need to be worried about in terms of diseases with these kind of veggies?
Oh, so many. How many tomatoes I've seen with rust or powdery mildew.
And that just kind of, like, you'll see it on the fruit itself or on the leaves
on
or
the
on
leaves.
Everything? On the leaves.
On
okay.
the leaves. Corn gets one and it's a gray leaf spot, mm-hmm. exactly as you would think. Fungal diseases, I find them to be a two-edged sword. Once you have them, they're not curative, okay? But they are preventative.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure, again, your plant has good airflow.
Okay,
that they're not crammed in together. Make sure you're watering accordingly. You don't want them in standing water. You don't want pathogens around them. You want that soil to be well drained. Sprinklers, no bueno.
You're not a fan.
No, I'm never a fan of sprinklers. They're wasteful. They spray water on everything that you don't need. Sprinklers are good for one thing, and I firmly believe this, and one thing only, lawns.
Yeah.
Okay, your grass, I'm not going to tell you to go out and water it with a hose gun. It's kind of silly. Sprinklers work good on your lawns. When it comes to your plants, perennials, annuals, veggies, no sprinkler, please. Please.
Maybe a soaker hose?
So, yeah, all day.
Love soaker hoses.
Love them. Love them. They save you money.
Mm-hmm.
They save you money. They're better. They're more efficient. And they prevent fungal disease.
Yeah.
Treat it immediately. Get it. The vast majority of okay, so one thing, well, I'm glad we went down this path. Broad spectrum fungicides, tons of them, tons of company make them. Safers, which make Trounce and whatnot. Scotts do one. Promix, Premiertech, they do one. There's tons of them on the market. Always make sure you read it.
Okay,
because on the back, often, or if it's one of those labels that you peel open and read the inside. Sometimes it will say, do not use X days to harvest. Here's an example. There is a spray. Nobody is smoking tomatoes, but let's talk about high production, okay?
Yeah.
Hemp is a big plant. Cannabis. Let's talk about a high production plant. And there is a spray. There's a reason why they tell you do not spray your cannabis. And if you spray it on, and if memory serves, it's pyrethrin, which is a insecticide. Spider mites love hemp and cannabis. You spray it on. Now, you can spray that on your tomatoes all day long, wash them off, no problem, follow the instructions. You spray it on cannabis. You then ignite the cannabis, and it turns it into cyanide smoke.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you really, really have to read instructions. If it tells you do not use on a certain type of plant, do not use it on a certain type.
Yeah.
Don't mess around. It's just not worth it.
Brad has celiac. How many times do we like, oh, this thing doesn't have it. Rice Krispie squares are fine because it's made of rice. No, it has malted barley in it.
When you told me that, I was angry.
Yeah, we have to read everything now. So it's the same with this. So just make sure you know what you're putting on your plant, especially because you're digesting it.
Exactly. And you only need to, you and Brad, okay, you go and you buy cookies and you're like, okay, these ones are safe.
Yeah.
The next week, you're not reading it again.
Right, exactly.
So you read it once and you go, oh, no, I can use this on corn. Okay, I can't use it 7 days before I harvest. Okay, no problem. Go ahead and do it.
Great.
Next year, you don't have to reread it. Okay, might not hurt in case they've reformulated, but since I've been in the industry, anytime something is reformulated, it says new formula, new package, and they change.
You know.
Exactly.
Okay, next up, we have to talk about bugs.
I love bugs. I'm sorry, I do. I love bugs.
Most gardeners don't.
Yeah.
Although I should say there are beneficial bugs and there are not so beneficial bugs.
Yeah.
So maybe we can talk about both.
There isn't really any specialty bug
that's
going to hit your plants.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. They're all the general.
Okay.
The big hitters that we all know, aphids, spider mites. I mean, they're just generalists. They'll go for anything.
Okay.
Tomatoes, not necessarily the fruits, the plants themselves are pretty resistant to slugs and snails.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep. Yeah, slugs and snails. Bees and peens. Bees and peens.
Snugs and
snails. Snugs and snails. Really like bees and peens. Slugs and snails. Slugs and snails. Slugs.
It's so relatable.
Yeah, and the moment I said it, I'm like, did I say that wrong? And then you laughed at me, and I was like, yes.
I tried hard not to, and you can't help it.
Yeah.
Yes, slugs and snails.
Slugs and
Say that 10 times fast. I tell you.
It actually sounds wrong to me now.
They don't like the tomatoes.
Yeah. I've had problems with slugs, absolutely. Most gardeners have. Never find that they attack my plants. They will absolutely eat the fruit.
Yeah.
If the fruit is close to the ground or touching the ground and they get it, game over. But they don't actually attack the plants. The problem is whenever I've had slugs, I've had so many tasty vegetables for slugs.
Yeah.
That they don't go for the ones that they're not there for. They absolutely go for more of the leafy greens, the cruciferous vegetables, they're all about them.
Yeah.
And again, pesticide best practices to get rid of your bugs.
Yeah.
Read the label, keep them in an open area.
Early detection. Oh.
Yeah, don't overreact.
Yep.
We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. You know, you see two aphids, it doesn't mean you're going to have an infestation. Now, to go back to what, because I love the fact that you brought up beneficial bugs.
I love them. I mean, ladybugs, right? I know they have good PR, but like, they're just so, like, I've seen them on an aphid-infested plant, and they just go to town.
Oh, they love it. Ladybird, spiders, centipedes.
Yep.
And then you can also buy the specialty ones that we have. If you're interested in learning more about that, absolutely check out our website.
Yeah, and we're going to throw everything that we talked about today on today's blog on goldenacre.ca/blog. So we'll actually throw in some of those beneficial insects and a link to BioLine so you can check it out yourself.
Well, the good thing about them, the reason I really like them, is there is zero time to harvest.
Yeah.
Like, release the bugs.
Yeah.
Release the bugs.
but go forth.
Yeah, exactly. and here's the great thing about them is they're a predator. Once their prey is gone, they will either leave to find more prey or they themselves will die out.
Yeah.
You don't end up with them becoming a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, like throughout history, it's not like, wow, there are a ton of wolves in this area. Like the wolves will be where the deer are, where the elk are. If the elk move, the wolves will move.
Right.
I've released ladybirds when I've had no aphids because I just figure more ladybirds in Calgary, the better for everybody.
Yeah, I was just thinking you would probably become the most popular neighbor if you released ladybugs because then they would go to benefit other gardens in your neighborhood.
People say, I released ladybirds and they all flew away. Well, that's what they do.
Yeah.
And the reason it doesn't bother me is they'll fly away and they'll find the biggest aphid. And the thing is, so the bags we sell, those little bags, you know, 250 ladybirds. You don't need 250. So you're like, well, I don't see any ladybirds. There could be five mm-hmm. amongst your tomato plants that are just happily, I think, what is it? One ladybird larva will eat something like 50 aphids in a day.
Yeah.
You know,
it's impressive.
Yeah. So you don't need that many. Let them go and kill them everywhere else so they don't come onto your property. Like my favorite bug that we sell through BioLine is the Aureus insidiosus.
That's right. I remember it.
Yeah.
It's like it just goes out there and just kills for sport.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best way to put it. Yeah.
Like, do you want anything else in your garden? Like that seems like the boss.
Yeah, but they only eat thrips.
Oh.
They're like very picky. I know, right? It'd be like, if that would be a generalist predator, I'd be a little scared.
Yeah.
Like, they'll kill 80 bugs in a day, but they only eat two. it's like the psychopath of the bug world. Like, just a rampant, raging psycho. But you have a problem with thrips?
Yeah.
That's the guy you want.
Yeah, that's it. What about predators? Like, do these kinds of plants need to be careful of birds or deer or squirrels?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes to all.
All of the above?
Oh, my. I have a picture. I'll see if I can find it and give it to you for the blog. But and I took the picture. I didn't scare him away. I was quite happy. And it's a squirrel sitting on my fence eating one of my tomatoes, looking, like, right in the window. Like, what are you going to do about it? I'm like, I'm not going to do anything. I share the wealth. Okay, please don't tell your friends.
Hope you get blossom end rot.
Hope you get blossom. Harsh. You're like, I know. Squirrels will eat them. Birds absolutely will. Deer. Oh, my God.
Deer?
Yeah.
Peas. They like all of this stuff?
Absolutely.
What do you do?
Fence it off, protect it,
yeah.
Put down products like Plant Skid.
Mm-hmm.
So Plant Skid is not a, it's not chemical, it's scent-based.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that they don't like the smell. Here's a good hack. Again, it can be hard to do. I don't mind sharing this one because, again, you're not hurting your plants. So deer are very sensitive to smell.
Right.
Right? That's one of their defense mechanisms. So go and buy really, really, really stinky soap like Irish Spring. Okay? Hang it up in any kind of netting, whatever you've got to hang it. When it rains, that smell leaks out. Now, that won't hurt your garden at all. It's soap. And the deer stay away from it. But here's the catch. You have to change the smell.
Oh, so, they get used to it.
Exactly. They get used to it, and they smell it all the time, and they go, well, clearly that's not a person. Like, that smell is there too prevalent. So every few weeks, you need to hang out a deodorant stick or whatever. They're skittish. They're opportunistic. So if they think there is a danger attached to one food source, they will absolutely go to the next. Even if it's not their preferred, they're like, oh, man, I really want to eat those peas.
Yeah.
Like, those look like some really good peas. But they're like, I don't like that smell. I don't like the smell of things around here.
Yeah, so go to, like, the next one. That's probably easier to get
exactly.
to. Less of a risk.
Yep. But deer will eat it. Squirrels will eat it. Skunks.
Oh, I forgot about skunks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's they'll funny. Get in there. About the only one, they'll eat the plant, but eventually they start staying away from it. The one that you're safest with is, I had absolutely nothing in my garden at all, not even bugs touch my Carolina Reapers. I was like, we're going to leave that one alone.
I don't even think we can touch them, can we?
Oh yeah, I ate one.
No, but like with your bare hand, it's fine. Like, I guess with any pepper, you have to be careful. Hey?
I planted the seed. With my bare hand,
mm-hmm.
And it was fine.
Okay.
But I literally took a seed, put it on the soil, pushed it, covered it, and then washed my hand.
Okay.
Okay. Once it's mainly the oils and the juices.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't want to get a crushed up seed in my eye or up my nose where, like, there's a mucous membrane, but my fingers are pretty calloused. The years of working in gardens, I pushed it down, I covered it with soil, and then I washed my hands.
Yeah.
Zero adverse effect. It's when you get into the pepper.
Okay.
It's when it starts growing and those oils are developing. I like to keep away birds, deer, and squirrels. I like scent-based deterrents or physical barriers because then there's no chance I'm going to harm the animal.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to use any traps or poisons or anything like that. I don't agree with that.
Or put something on your fruits and vegetables that
yep.
might be toxic to ingest yourself.
Well, yeah. anytime you put down a poison like that, there is a chance you may poison the animal you don't want to poison.
That's true too. Right? And you've got, if you've got kids and you've got pets exactly. in your garden, yeah.
You know, I've grown everywhere. I've grown in areas where there's deer. I've done all kinds of stuff. Yeah, they can be a pest. Absolutely. I get it. But if you know they're there, stop preventing it.
Yeah.
Stop preventing it. Like, go plant, I don't know, beans at your neighbor's house. Yeah. Like, I just would like to give you these beans with no smelly stuff.
It's some leftover. Yeah. I don't want these. But I mean, look at how much fun you can be having with these towering giants, right?
Yep.
I mean, today we talked about tomatoes, beans, peas.
Yeah.
Said it right. Corn.
Snugs and slails.
We even talked about hemp.
Like, yep.
That's fantastic. And so I hope that you got a little bit of inspiration from this episode today. If you have any questions about any of these things, we tried to go as in-depth without going too complicated. And
if it's your first go at doing it, don't go too big. Don't set yourself up for failure. Have some fun. And like Brandy's saying, we're available for questions.
Yes, we absolutely are. And maybe you'll have a nice little, you know, vegetable basket like we have today.
Yep.
Doesn't this look so appetizing?
You know what? It smells.
Yes, yeah, smells amazing. It's making me want to plant everything on this table.
With table corn?
Yeah.
Is there really any point in growing your own garden corn here?
And that's like, something, too, that you have to kind of take into account. Is that something that you're going to be putting your time and energy into? Or back are you east, like, I love table corn?
Yeah. Back east, you don't get the corn that you get here.
No, that's true. So maybe, you know, depending on where you are, if you don't have access to that kind of thing, then yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But honestly, that wraps us up for this week and our big towering giant seed starting episode. If you're listening over on Spotify, make sure to give us your perspective on our polls and questions. Let us know what you're going to be growing out of what we talked about today. If you are also on Spotify, you can leave us an anonymous voicemail. We'll feature that on the show. That's always really fun. We're available online. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. On YouTube now, which is really exciting.
Oh, yeah.
So leave us a comment over there. You can also email us info@goldenacre.ca and just put like podcast somewhere in the subject line and then we'll see it. And next week, I believe we're talking all about root vegetables. So we're going to be talking about carrots, celery, turnip, beet, radish. So the things that kind of live under the ground that we pull up, because it's a whole nother story. So,
oh, it's that. You can walk outside and you can look at your tomato and you can be like, it's doing great.
You know when to harvest it.
You look at your carrot, you're like, they're doing great. You pull them out of the ground and they're a centimeter
long. I know. This happened to me all the time. And this is why I'm really excited for this episode, because I want to know, like, when do you harvest it? What's the best soil to use? Like, I want to look into all the varieties, because I've seen different colored carrots and it's really cool. So,
and fun spoiler, I'll talk more about this next week.
Yeah.
You can grow radishes in a pot.
There you go.
Yeah,
you
it doesn't have to be in your garden.
We'll talk more about that next week.
Okay, bye everyone.